You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hi, I'm Fisher Stevens, and I'm in today for Leonard Lopate. Quite an honor. Last month, New York State and Governor Cuomo took the major step of banning hydraulic fracturing, also known as fracking. And I'm honored today to be joined by Josh Fox. Hello, Josh.
Hi, how are you?
Good. The writer and director of Oscar-nominated documentary Gasland and Gasland 2. Josh is also part of the Solutions Grassroots Tour, which he'll be talking about, which will be visiting cities in February and March. So I am pleased to welcome Josh back to the Leonard Lopate Show today.
It's fantastic to be here. Thanks.
So, Josh, tell me, did Governor Cuomo's decision on fracking surprise you?
You know, it didn't surprise me. I've always said that Governor Cuomo is a smart man and he was going to do the right thing. And New York State positioned itself in a way that no other state did on fracking. They actually engaged democracy. From the very beginning of this question, back in 2008, when all the gas industry was coming and leasing land all throughout New York State, New York said, you know, this is something different. We should study it. We should do an environmental impact study. And that process opened up the question to democratic participation. And when that happened, that was under Governor Patterson, it engaged a process whereby people could deal with this incredibly controversial and difficult issue and actually impact the way the government was going to function. In 2008, there was no science on fracking, really, to speak of. There were just reports from Wyoming and Pennsylvania and Texas about people lighting their water on fire and water contamination, air pollution, health problems, industrialization. People were very, very concerned about this. And as the years went by, you saw science build and you saw public participation grow to a huge extent. Before fracking, the public had only weighed in on these questions with about 1,000 comments per question. So when you have an environmental impact study, the public gets to comment. The previous record for comments was about 1,000. The first fracking review, 13,000 comments. The second fracking review, 70,000 comments. And the last fracking review on the impact statement, which was, I think, was in 2012, 204,000 public comments on the issue. Now, the DEC has to weigh in on each one of those.
Right.
That meant that the process was slowed down, the Cuomo administration could contemplate the science, and this is a huge, huge victory for science. And it's kind of remarkable in this day, in 2014, that a government actually paying attention to science is something remarkable.
It's happening. But, what were the repercussions of other states once Cuomo and New York banned it?
Well,
Has there been any?
You know, I think there has been a huge surge in positivity among people fighting fracking. Every state is different. You know, I mean, and as I made Gasland, I traveled to about 20 of the 34 states where there's fracking. And the political climate in each place is really what determines the way the question goes. Pennsylvania, for example, rolled out the red carpet for the fracking industry. And as you see now, PA is in a huge trouble. I mean, you've got the state forests and the state game lands being ripped apart. You have radioactive wastewater found in Pennsylvania streams. You have Pittsburgh's drinking water supply shut down for 6 weeks because fracking wastewater made itself into the Allegheny River.
Well, talk
you have
about
all
how much,
manner
how
of
much fracking is going on right now in Pennsylvania.
A lot. You know, thousands of wells a year. So you're talking about a huge influx of chemical contamination into the land. And of course, each fracking well uses 2 to 9 million gallons of water. That water is infused with a whole host of toxic chemicals, which is a mix that you call fracking fluid. And a lot of those materials are proprietary to these companies and toxic, and they have been showing up in the water supplies. Additionally, also the methane from the fracking, the raw gas, finds its way into aquifers, migrates into aquifers through leaky casings in most cases. And then you could get this phenomenon of people being able to light their water on fire, which, of course, is spectacular and extraordinarily disturbing and not something that you want
not
to have in your
you
shower.
No. I mean, I also read somewhere that Cuomo, one of the things that he based his decision on was, do I want someone to frack in my backyard? And he said, after reading the report, I can say no.
Right.
So what is it going to take to make more people understand how crazy it is what we're doing?
Well, I think that the thing about fracking is that it's so many places, and that makes it a game changer because it wakes up huge section of the population throughout the United States to the issue. And there are definitely two Americas right now. There's the America that's inside the frack zone, and there's the America that's outside the frack zone. The people who are in the frack zone are dealing with fracking every single day. You don't have to talk about it. People are well-versed in what's going on. It's getting the folks outside that zone to pay attention. And, you know, truly, when you look at the fact that right now, 15 million Americans live within 1 mile of a fracking well. And this campaign is in its infancy. The oil and gas industry, in a PowerPoint presentation in 2013, the Society of Petroleum Engineers said that they were going to drill more wells in the next 10 years than they had drilled in the last 100 years. So they wanted to add 2 million new wells to the United States. That's drilling the U.S. into Swiss cheese.
Right,
that's putting everyone in harm's way. So when you think about how many people are in that zone, then you think about, okay, for example, New York City is downstream. The watershed, which is upstate, that's in that zone. When you're talking about everybody who lives downstream, then you have a huge other population that's involved. And then when you think about regional air pollution and smog, right now in the Barnett Shale in Texas, you have one quarter of all fourth graders, 25% of kids who are 10 years old, have asthma. That's three times the state average in Texas. That's directly related to the amount of air pollution and smog that's caused by the fracking industry in Texas. So you have regional impacts. Then, of course, when you consider the fact that fracking represents the greatest increase in oil and gas drilling and the greatest expansion of the oil industry in the world today, that's a huge climate question. So everyone's affected with climate change. So this is how I think about it, as everyone is being on the front line. Everyone is, to some degree, involved. When you're talking about, you know, the superstorms that have ravaged New York State, Sandy, $30 billion, Irene, destroying upstate and Vermont and places in Pennsylvania, we all have to realize that this is the question. This is not, if we just leave it at, oh, we won in New York, isn't this amazing? Mm-hmm. Which is amazing and remarkable,
no,
and all credit you know, to the grassroots there for really pushing this, and a huge amount of credit to Governor Cuomo and Zucker, the health commissioner, for being our new champions here. But I think that we all are involved in talking about how to transition off of fossil fuels.
I'm Fisher Stevens, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking to Josh Fox, the director of the Oscar-nominated film Gasland and Gasland 2. Josh, President Obama has been a strong supporter of fracking and has called natural gas, quote, a bridge fuel to clean energy. Is there a difference between getting natural gas from fracking and getting natural gas other ways? And why has the president been such a proponent of fracking?
You'd have to ask him. I've been trying to ask him for 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, no. Well, to your first question, 90% of all oil and gas wells right now are fracked. So this is the frontier. So when you're talking about gas, you're talking about frack gas. When you're talking about the expansion in gas-fired power plants, you're talking about frack gas. When you're talking about LNG ports, you're talking about frack gas. And it is really puzzling as to how the Obama administration has handled this question.
But
they've been very all over the map. You know, at first when this question first came to me, George Bush was in the White House.
Right.
And when Obama came in, we thought, wow, we're going to be doing much better. As
right.
it turns out, most of this fracking that's going on is on Obama's watch. These wells are his fracked wells. These chemicals in the ground have his initials on them. And it's a part of his legacy that's going to be very disturbing as we go forward.
Although, as we know, the Keystone Pipeline, which is already in existence, and you can talk a little bit about that, but there is a bill where one of the first missions of this new Congress was to re-vote on this bill to complete, I guess is the word, the Keystone Pipeline. And the president has said that he will veto this. So there is hope that, you know, the president maybe – has he changed his mind? Is he looking at facts? Is Cuomo getting into his ear? Has he moved a little bit to the other
– Well, the Keystone Pipeline – although it is related to the fracking issue, it's not about frack gas. It's about tar sands in Alberta.
Right.
So it's a sort of different question. But these are the two marquee environmental issues. When you talk about Keystone, you talk about fracking, you talk about a very same movement. It is extremely encouraging to hear Obama talk about Keystone these days. It's extremely encouraging to have had the agreement with China that no one was expecting. So do I think President Obama truly appreciates and is working on climate? Yes, I absolutely do. Do I think he underestimates the power of the grassroots support of the movement of against fracking in America? Absolutely. This is the backbone of what should be his support. You know, President Obama was elected on a grassroots wave that swept through the United States, where it was neighbor talking to neighbor, overpowering corporate interests. That is exactly the way the fracking movement works. You have hundreds of grassroots organizations, mom and pop, organizations that sprang up at somebody's kitchen or picnic table in the Upper Delaware or in Corning or in Alfred, New York, or in Brockport. You know, hundreds of these small grassroots organizations. That's what has stopped fracking in New York State. And that is a movement that exists in Pennsylvania and in Texas and in Wyoming and California and New Mexico and all across the United States. President Obama would be wise, I think, to encourage that movement and support it. There is simply no way to fight climate change without stopping fracking.
Right.
People don't realize that the fracking ban in New York State was one of the biggest wins on the climate that has ever happened. It's the equivalent of keeping all that gas in the ground is the equivalent of taking 57 million cars or 72 coal-fired power plants offline for a year. That's astounding. That's
huge.
You know, yeah. you can't, and I think there's a misconception. Unfortunately, when you have new information, it takes a little while to get to the powers that be. And the new information is this: frack gas is just as bad for the environment, or worse, than coal. Now, how's that true? The gas industry came out for a long time and said, we're better than coal. We're the cleaner alternative. You see commercials for ExxonMobil. On MSNBC and all these places that say, oh, ExxonMobil, we're better than coal. Well, when you burn natural gas, it's 50% less carbon emissions into the atmosphere than coal. However,
the methane.
And right. This is the point that we've been drilling home for years now and trying to get this to up the supply chain, you know, that when you drill for gas, you're leaking all this methane into the atmosphere. And methane is 80 to 105 times more potent in the short term, in the 20-year time frame, than carbon dioxide is. Now, the natural gas industry actually overtook cows and the meat industry as the leading emitter of methane into the atmosphere, which means that if you have anywhere between 1% and 3% leakage on your total production, you're doing worse than coal for the climate. Now, we've looked at this question, or science has looked at this question, and we've taken it on, and we're finding anywhere between 3% and 17% leakage.
Much more than originally.
This city is leaking 2% to 5% of natural gas just in terms of the distribution in the streets, in the pipes. The pipes are 100 years old. As you probably know, in our neighborhood in Brooklyn, we had massive explosion.
I know.
that was caused by methane leakage underground.
Right. Oh, it's quite frightening. I'm speaking with Josh Fox, and his documentary Gasland was nominated for an Oscar, and he's recently back from the Amazon where he was filming a new project on climate change, which we'll talk about after the break. And coming up later is Swedish filmmaker Ruben Östlund as he discusses his 10 years in film, including his latest movie, Force Majeure, Sweden's entry for Best Foreign Language Film at this year's Oscars. Plus, director Orlando von Eisel talks about his Netflix original documentary, Virunga, about an embattled team of park rangers and the endangered mountain gorillas they protect. I'm Fisher Stevens, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org, and we'll be right back with more with Josh Fox after the break. Hi, I'm Fisher Stevens, in today for Leonard Lopate, and I'm sitting here with Josh Fox, the director of Gasland and Gasland 2. Josh, we've been talking a lot about fracking. We're also in the midst of a historic slump in petroleum prices. What has been driving that? Is the collapse
of
prices?
Well, this is really interesting.
That's been helping our fracking situation.
Well, Saudi Arabia basically told OPEC that they don't need them anymore. OPEC controls prices. It inflates the price of oil all across the world. Saudi Arabia has incredibly cheap oil to produce, and they are the lion's share of OPEC. So all this other oil, which is more expensive from Ecuador or Venezuela or the United States, in the OPEC nations, they prop up the price so that everyone is making a lot of money. Saudi Arabia has decided that they're just going to flood the market with their oil, and that's crashing the price. And what that's going to do is it's going to put all these other places out of business that are much more expensive to produce oil. And there's a key quote from a while back from Sheikh Yamani, who was the minister of oil for Saudi Arabia, that said, he said, the Stone Age didn't end for lack of stones.
Right.
He said, you know, we'll stop using oil way before we run out of it. So I think the Saudi Arabians are saying, we would rather sell our oil at $20 a barrel than have all this oil in the ground 20 years from now that's totally worthless. And that's an earthquake. When you have the chief oil producing nation in the world, or one of them, right, who controlled the price, saying, okay, it's over. We're at the end of the oil age. We're not going to be needed anymore. We're going to sell everything off at cheap. Fire sale, if you will. That's amazing. Now, who knows? This could be a PR stunt. We've been down some of these roads before.
Right.
And I think the lesson to be learned here, apart from the unfortunate fact that you're going to see, you know, the resurgence of the Hummer and the SUVs, is that...
Maybe not. Arnold sold his finally. Schwarzenegger. No longer running. I think he's driving a Prius, a big Prius.
I don't know. But... what this means is, if you're in an oil-based system, your energy mix is subject to tyranny. Mm-hmm. Whether that's the tyranny of the Saudi Arabians, or the tyranny of Putin, or the tyranny of George Bush blowing up your whole country in Iraq, for example, the lifeblood of your energy, of your society, is going to be subject to someone coming in and hijacking the whole system.
Well, this is making the tar sands people freak out.
Oh, well, it's going to shut. It could shut down the tar sands. It could shut down fracking. It could shut down oil producers all across the world.
So we have to thank them.
Well, it's it would be a good time to implement a carbon tax.
Yes, perfect timing. Because talk about a carbon tax. Talk about your view on a carbon tax and the possibility of a carbon tax and what that means.
The oil industry gets to dump their waste product into the atmosphere. As Bill McKibben has said 1,000,000,000 times, you know, if you ran a restaurant and you threw your garbage into the street, it would be cheaper to operate. But you have to pay because it's part of the public interest to throw away your garbage. So this is essentially a way of the oil industry and consumers of oil paying for their garbage, the carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere. And that means that we have to pay a tax, and that can help all sorts of different things. I think the question is how that's allocated. But the real answer for me, and I think this is what we're seeing increasingly all over the world, and the Chinese just made an enormous commitment, is renewable energy.
Yep.
Distributed generation of renewable energy means that you are not subject to those kind of price fluctuations. You are not subject to tyranny in that same way. We are not being hijacked constantly in our economic situation by oil. And that is what I'm going out on tour with Zephyr Teachout, the amazing governor candidate from New York last election, and some music acts, Bethany and Rufus, Bethany Yarrow, possibly Peter Yarrow, as part of this thing called the Solutions Grassroots Tour. And you can find out about Solutions Grassroots Tour, if I could plug the website.
Sure.
At solutionsgrassroots.com. And what that is moving along through New York and Pennsylvania at first, and then we're going to expand it to all the places where we had this incredible grassroots presence on the anti-fracking campaign, and start to bring people in contact with the companies that can provide renewable energy right now to them in their communities as individuals. And also probably recommend some of the stuff on the legislative side that we have to do to improve the situation. But New York has amazing renewable energy laws that are only getting better.
Well,
again,
talk about
credit
options.
To Andrew Cuomo.
Right. Well, talk about options. You know, I just recently got on a plan at my local farmer's market. I just moved to a different part of Brooklyn, and I signed up for a renewable energy plan at my farmer's market. So it's starting to happen.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit. Is it easy to get on a renewable energy plan?
In fact, one of our options is called Easy. If you go to solutionsgrassroots.com, you'll see there are three categories. We break it down for you. And you can do this today. You can do this in New York City. You can do this all over the state and in many other states. There is the option of simply, as you said, buying renewable energy. So you, instead of, you tell Con Edison or whoever is providing your energy, I don't want to buy it from a coal or a gas source. Right. I want to buy it from clean, renewable power. And there's a company called Ethical Electric that does that. So when you go to solutionsgrassroots.com, you click on the Easy tab, and then you go to the link that you can switch your bill right there, and they build locally sourced wind. So the more people who sign up for that option, the more locally sourced wind power they buy. We have another option called Easy Plus, which is just put solar panels on your roof. And there are companies, Sungevity's one, SolarCity's another. There are many of them. There are local companies. There are national companies that will lease you solar panels on a 10 or 20-year lease, or you can buy them. And that actually pays for itself over the course of the lease because it's diminishing the amount of electricity that you use because you're putting solar.
You're still going to have to be a bit on the grid with those.
Sure. So why we call it Easy Plus? You should switch your power over, but then you can also provide some of it. And then there's the third option, which we call hardcore, we're going to change the world. Which is, of course, the thing that really gets anything done, which is organizing. And what we're asking people to do is organize and have dinner parties, have potlucks, have talk to their neighbors. You know, this fracking win starts with five or six people sitting around a table in the upper Delaware River Basin in the New York City watershed, somewhere in the Catskills, going, what are we going to do about this?
Right.
I think we should found an organization. And I watched those, starting in 2008, those amazing heroes who you probably, there are too many names to recount,
right?
Changed the course of energy history in New York State and hopefully have a ripple effect across the world. You know, we have a ban on fracking in France. We have a ban on fracking in the Netherlands. We have bans, local bans in Colorado, in Vermont, in New Mexico, all across the United States.
It's banned in Colorado.
Not in all of Colorado, but in certain places.
Wasn't there a famous moment when Hickenlooper said the governor, that he was going to drink fracking fluid?
Yeah, I think he should have been impeached for pledging that he wanted to commit suicide.
It was really a scotch and soda, wasn't it? Johnny Walker Blue? Yeah, I think it was.
The idea that there's fracking fluid is already a deception because there are 800 or 900 different chemicals that can make up the fluids in fracking.
Right.
You don't want to line up that row of shot glasses.
No.
You know what I mean? There might be a couple of those ingredients that you could drink, but there's no such thing as non-toxic fracking.
I want to bring up this moment that, to me, changed my whole outlook on the environment, which was in your film Gasland, when there was that flammable tap where you convinced, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but you actually went into his house and you just said, turn on your tap and lit it on fire.
Right.
And I feel like that was a major moment in the environmental movement when people went, oh my God, this really is a serious problem.
Well, that clip went really super viral. It was on, 300 different news stations or whatever. And that was a phenomenon that happened over and over and over and over.
Constantly, right.
Heard about it, was like the kind of, because, when I first started making this film, it's really daunting to try to illustrate a problem that's happening under the ground.
Right.
You can't take a film camera 8,000 feet under. I mean, it would be virtually impossible to do that. So, when I first heard that people could light their water on fire, I was like, I have to see this.
Right.
So I heard about it in Dimock, Pennsylvania, where they proved that there was a huge amount of methane that had migrated into that town's aquifer. But people's water wells were offline because their houses could explode. So nobody could do it for me. So there were other traumatic things that we could talk about, but I needed to see this. So I heard about it on actually the Keith Olbermann show out in Colorado. It was happening with a woman named Amy Ellsworth. And I just made a beeline. I just got in the car and got in my 92 beat up 92 Camry and drove out there and met them and said, can you show me this? And pretty much everyone in that whole town could do it. And the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission had told a lot of people in that town that it was nothing, that it was normal, that it was fine. But Amy Ellsworth and her husband were very smart. They got independent tests done.
Right.
And they showed the government that they had to, that it was actually the fault of oil and gas, and they had to own up and say, yes, it is the fault of oil and gas.
Did they pay?
Well, it was a very sad moment. It was a year later. I called up Amy and I said, hey, how are you doing? She goes, well, I can talk to you about anything you want except for gas. I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, we moved, and that's all I'm going to say about
it. Got it.
So she settled with a company.
Hush, hush.
And most of those settlements include a non-disclosure agreement, which means the evidence disappears from the record. It's a huge injustice. The only thing that can break those is a congressional subpoena. She did end up testifying, I believe, although I don't know for sure, to the Waxman Commission, Henry Waxman, when they had subpoena power between 2010 and 2012 in the Congress. But 2008 and 2010. But, a lot of these stories disappear because the oil and gas industry will force you in a position where you have to trade your First Amendment rights for the ability to get out of Gasland.
Right. So what do you I'd like to talk about what you're working on now a little bit and what's the next step. Obviously, we have a lot of work to do. Your work is not nearly finished, although we've seen great movement in New York State, and hopefully this will affect Pennsylvania. And as we know, our states border each other, and there may be even a residual effect from the Pennsylvania fracking. What is it called, the constitutional pipeline? Or
well, there's this. There's a lot of Pennsylvania gas that's going to go into New York, the Constitution pipeline. There's infrastructure projects, many people being arrested in Seneca Lake right now because they want to store gas. There's a rally in Harrisburg on the 20th at the inauguration of Tom Wolf, the new governor of Pennsylvania. I will be speaking at that rally. We have to go to PA. PA is a different situation. It's about reparations. It's about fixing the state. It's about stopping the drilling. We have, you know, huge, huge problems. I'm a Pennsylvania resident. I have to own up. I live a mile from the border in Pennsylvania and the Upper Delaware River. You know, it's a heartbreak situation, but we have to rally, and New Yorkers have to rally with us. And this has been a mutual effort, Pennsylvania teaching New York. But my so that's one of my goals, to really work hard in Pennsylvania.
But Josh, I have another question.
Sure.
I'm having a financially hard time. I live in a rural area, and the gas and oil companies come to me and say, I'm going to pay you money. You know, are people getting upset at your work because they feel they're losing out? Have you come across that?
Yeah, it's been very polarizing in a lot of ways. It's been hard to be in a town where half the town, 60% of the land was leased by 30% of the people. So we had the numbers on our side. But certainly when I go to the general store in my town, in Milanville, half the people there love what I've been doing, and the other half there don't. And it's been very contentious. However, I think that there's this also enormous wave of regret from people who signed those leases, whose land was contaminated and destroyed. So there's a big change that's happened. And I think that, as we've seen over the last 7 years, the science has borne out the reporting that we've done.
Mm. I'm just getting a question here from somebody. A New Jersey homeowner is about to make the switch from oil to gas heat. Mm. She wonders which is better, or better option environmentally.
Well, they're not. Neither is better, really.
Solar.
Unfortunately,
get off
not. Yeah. The thing that we've had to do, there are heat pumps, there is geothermal. There's a lot of different options right now for people to do in terms of how to convert their home. I would worry in the short term and the long term about converting from one fossil fuel to another. That's really, unfortunately, what's being pushed right now by Con Edison, is switching from oil to gas. It's a huge mistake. It's an infrastructure problem for New York City, which will result in problems way down the line, decades from now and right now. We should be switching from to renewable energy. We can switch to electric heat that is generated by the wind. It is more expensive, but there are options for energy efficiency. There are energy efficiency companies that you can use to keep your bill the same. This is a question that shouldn't only be an individual one, which is why we're doing this Solutions Grassroots Tour, so that we're asking people to assemble and start to do the work together.
There are companies I have been reading that certain utility companies are changing the way they think, which is what we need. We need these big, huge corporations to actually get involved in alternative energy as opposed to necessarily fighting them, but let them change the way that they think. And I think that's...
There are huge changes. I think the utilities have been standing in the way for a while, and we're hoping that will change. But this all comes from the bottom up, right? It comes from people working together. And that's... been a refrain, you know, and it's been life-changing for so many people. You know, I mean, this happened to me, not randomly, but I wasn't working on the environment in 2008.
What were you doing?
Well, I'm a theater director. Mm-hmm. I was actually on this program once in 2002 for a show that I did in New York about 9/11. And, you know, I was working on issues. I was looking at the Iraq War. I'd made a film about the Iraq War. And, you know, this changed my life. And, you know, the first movie really became that journey into America to find out what was happening with fracking and finding that it was devastating. And the second movie, Gasland 2, is all about how the government was abdicating responsibility about that. And what's led me to this next film, which is on climate, is this bigger question of, wow, it's not just about drilling. It's not just about local in your backyard. This is the whole ball game right here. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of the biggest crisis that humanity's ever faced. And it was really that knock on the door from the gas industry that leads me down this weird journey. Yes. And I've been all around the world shooting this new film, and we're going to show clips of the new film on the Solutions Grassroots Tour as a kind of way to ask the audience, well, which part of this do you like? And do you, you know, it's a new way of testing out the movie. So we're going to be showing excerpts from it. And we've shot in Africa and in South America and Australia and all throughout the American West and Iceland. And it's a really amazing journey. And what I've found is that there's a sense, a dawning sense of a value structure that this you know, current economic system is completely out of line with, which we actually have to reinstate, which is that the earth is valuable, that our relationships with people are valuable, that our neighbors are matter to us. All of these very traditional type of things are indigenous values are being reflected whether I'm in the middle of the deepest Amazon or I'm out on the Rockaways at the Action Center with Aria Doe and Occupy Sandy, or I'm in the Rocky Mountain National Forest with Wyoming ranchers.
I mean, we're going to have to wrap up, but I just want to say it is mind-blowing what it's going to take for people to – everybody to really understand what's going on deep down. And the deeper you dig, as you have dug, the more you know. And we are facing interesting times.
We want to address this on a nightly basis at Solutions Grassroots Tour. So you can find out more about where we're going to be. We're going to be in New York and Pennsylvania all throughout February and March. And at solutionsgrassroots.com, if you sign up there, we'll send you emails of where we're coming. And we would like to actually, we're still determining that schedule. So if you want to have us come to your town, let us know.
Great. Well, I am looking forward to seeing your film, and I really appreciate you coming by. I've been speaking with Josh Fox about fracking, the environment, climate change, and more. His Oscar-nominated documentary, Gasland, is currently streaming on Netflix, and you can find out more about his Solutions Grassroots Tour on our show page at WNYC.org. Josh, keep up the good work, my brother.
Thank you so much. It's been really a pleasure to talk to you today.
You too.